Is it a dumb game, or am I just dumb?
What's dropping?
If you are looking for relevant gaming coverage from experts, you are not getting it on this show.
The handshake seals the contract. From the contract, there's no turning back. The turning point of the career in Korea being insincere. The holiday was fun packed. The contract still intact.
Boop, boop, boop. That song is a dumb song. That is also great.
Oh, I just heard it on the radio.
Holy fuck, in Detroit?
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's on like a...
Wow, deep cut.
It was on a station that does like a variety of local music, but then the lady who does it, she'll throw in some oldies and some... Not oldies, but Jesus. Is this considered an oldie?
Yeah, well, it is. I mean... Yeah, think about when we were growing up, oldies were from the late 60s.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
You know, so, yes, it is an oldie.
It's so upsetting to think about.
That was Depeche Mode Everything Counts, by the way.
Yeah, yeah. Full credit goes to songwriters Martin Gore.
M. Gore. D. Gahan.
Man, but what it got me thinking about, too, was that brilliant Exciter tour that we saw. Is that still in your top five shows you've ever been to? Live shows.
Yeah, I mean, you can't, it's hard to top a bunch of buds checking out D Mode. Second row. Like, it doesn't get much better than the highlight though, and I think this was that show, was when we pre-drank, we had a designated driver, we pre-drank, and then I believe we were drinking in the car.
Yeah, we had a bunch of Miller Lights tucked away in the seat backs, and then so we were drinking in the car. So if you remember, I think it was pre-show, before we even got to our seats, the show was getting ready to start or whatever, and we're in the bathroom. All of us are lined up at stalls.
Wait, you're skipping the most intense part of this, was we were in the car drinking beer.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we hit some traffic, and it was about an hour drive or whatever.
Yeah.
And in that time... all of our bladders had reached capacity. They were nigh overflowing. I've never had to hold my urethra so tight. It was painful. And then we park, and it's a big outdoor venue. And when you park, there's a long way until you get to the bathroom. So I think we basically were like, you can't sprint. Because that shakes everything up. We had to, like, fast walk in severe pain, all of us at the same time.
So there's what? There was four of us or five of us. There was me, you, Scott, and Shane, right? So I think it was just four of us there.
Yeah.
And we all get into the bathroom, and we're unloading. Our bladders are filled to capacity, and they're unloading. And I think a good 2.5 minutes go by, and not a single person in the every occupied stall was the same group of guys that had first got in there. So there's the four of us and like 12 other dudes, and we're all still pissing. And somebody takes note and goes like, and we all start laughing because we all realize this is the same crew that's been pissing for 2.5 minutes now.
Yeah, imagine the sound of four buckets of water being dumped into a relatively quiet bathroom into urinals. And there's always that, you know, when you're a guy, you know there's a certain expectation of length for someone at a urinal.
Right.
And we exceeded it at least three times over.
You know if there's a nervous pisser nearby because, you know, you're not hearing it, the flow of urine hitting the back of the stall. But, like, it was like fire hoses if you added up all that sound.
And The restroom buckled under the pressure. There was a slight tremor because all the streams hit the same wall at once. And it's Newtonian physics.
If anything, we should have achieved some sort of blast back. All of us at the stalls should have ended up flying backwards a few feet. Oh, well, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to episode one... Ock. How does that work?
We're in double digits.
We've done it.
We did it. You're simply the best.
Better
than all the rest.
We did it, ladies and gentlemen. 10 episodes of the show.
And what's really special about this is we've done 10 episodes and we have 10 fans.
What's sad about it, though, is that one leaves after each show. It's not like we have 10. We just have one per show.
Like, enough of this. Wait, so seriously, they're never going to do any real news stories?
Is this really going to turn into a depressing close quarters about playing games alone? Ugh, I do not want to listen to that.
Isn't this supposed to be a comedy show?
10 episodes in, and I guess what we need to know this week is, Tanner, what have you been playing that's dumb?
Oh, so, I guess this qualifies. It's hard to name a dumb game that's relatively contemporary. It's like you need some time away from it. But what I've been playing, I've had Gears of War 3 sitting on my shelf for, I think, years at this point. It came out a while ago. And I played the first two. I liked the first one, thought the second one was dumb as hell, and didn't really enjoy it. And now playing the third one just to finish the series, to finish the fight! And have been having a great time with it, as well as enjoying probably the dumbest moments of the entire series. Gears of War is clearly a game made by dude bros.
Right.
Who have the sensitivities of dude bros, who are just interested in violence and action and all of that. But somewhere, games grew up as they were making the games, in a way. You know, you have things like Gone Home coming out, and you have people saying that maybe we should have a female lead of a game that doesn't have giant tits or something. And so gaming has changed since Gears of War came out, which was, what, 8, 9 years ago when the first consoles came out, essentially. It was the game. It didn't release at launch, but it came out, you know, maybe 6 months afterward, and was the thing that kind of solidified the 360 as the lead console. So as games grew up, they were like, well, we need to start, first of all, diversifying the cast, which, of course, then they added two super hot chicks. And I don't know if Cole was in the first one, the black guy, because you played the first one.
Yeah, I played it with you. I don't remember, though, honestly.
He might have been added later. Anyway, he is one of the most stereotypical black characters of all time in games. He's like a sports player. He talks super urban, you know. It's just awful. And then the third thing they did...
Hold on.
Yeah.
He's in it, and he goes by the name Coltrane.
Yeah, it's fucking terrible. And having just saw Royal Tenenbaums where Royal calls Danny Glover Coltrane, it's like, Jesus Christ. So they've tried to age it up and diversify, but Coltrane's worse than ever. And what they did is they tried to add really deep emotional moments in the third one. One of them I can't really talk about because it's a huge spoiler, but one of them involves Coltrane, where you go back to the football stadium that he used to play in. Of course, it's not football. I forget what stupid sport they call it, but it's basically football. You go back to the old stadium, and he's like in the locker room, and he like opens up his locker. And then he's like back in the day, coming out onto the field to a cheering crowd.
Oh my God.
And it's like in slow-mo. And suddenly the contemporary world and the old football game blend, and there's like a bomb in the field. And you gotta run through monsters and get the bomb. And then you gotta run the bomb back to the goal. And like spike it in a monster, and he explodes, and then you wake back up in it, and they're like, "Cole, you know that was amazing."
Oh my
god! And you're back in the it's so stupid.
So he doesn't have war flashbacks. He has high school football flashbacks.
And they try so hard to make it emotional. And then the other one other thing was a big, huge, probably the emotional climax of the game happens. Of the series happens. Shit's hitting the fan. Things are dying all over the place. There's ultra violence. Something super emotionally impactful just happened. And like you're seeing all the monsters blowing up and blood and fire. And they have that Tears for Fears Mad World song.
Oh yeah, I love that
instrumental
song.
Playing over that.
Okay.
You know, and they're trying to like do the this is going to be really cool because it's super fucking crazy. And then you've got this really peaceful thing put. It's like, this is the shit when I was 12 writing little short stories on my, in my Trapper Keeper. This is the type of shit I was thinking.
Right.
These are 30, 40-year-old men. And they're still at this stage of development? Have you consumed any good art? For fuck's sake! Have you watched anything other than Fast and Furious? Oh, fuck.
Oh, shit.
Super dumb, but it's actually a really good game, I think.
Maybe I'll have to check it out. I'll see if it's in the bargain bin somewhere.
Oh, it is.
Oh, nice. This week, I played good games. I'd like to give a shout-out to a good game, which you turned me on to, the pinball arcade game.
We then have to give another shout-out to Jeff Gerstmann of Giant Bomb, who kind of, I think, is if we are two of the only players of this game, he's the third.
Well, it's if you love pinball, there's no way you can't love this game. And I only say that because each table that you play, it feels about as authentic as I think you can get within a virtual world. If you've played any of the games, some of my favorite games are in this one. In fact, Medieval Madness is my favorite game. When I was in Oakland, we sought it out within the Haight-Ashbury district just so we could find a place to play Medieval Madness. It's one of my favorite games of all time. Games in general, not just pinball, but it's my favorite pinball game ever. And even when you're playing it in the virtual realm, it still feels authentic. There are a few tables that feel a little shaky. Sometimes the camera zooms in a bit too close. Sometimes, you know, I don't know if you've had that experience too, where the camera kind of moves a bit, or it's on an angle that feels weird, like you're looking down too close to the table.
And then when they, you know, some tables have that fucking cheap ass thing where it'll swallow the ball and spit it back at you really fast.
Yeah.
And that becomes really pronounced.
And sometimes the camera can't even react quickly enough for you to see where it's, when it's coming at your flipper. But it has some really good, I think actually my favorite part of the game is the little tidbits of information. And I almost wish that more arcades who had pinball games in them would feature, almost like you see hanging in an art gallery, like a placard that says who the designer was, the year that it came out, and then that morsel of information about how many units were produced. Because it's mind-boggling. You see some of these games that I think of, when you think of units, what, over the last few weeks, you've told me that the Wii sold 83 million units or some shit like that. And when you see the pinball games, they may have only produced between 3 and 8,000 total worldwide units.
And these are the best of the best.
Yeah. Right? So it's incredible to me when I see that kind of stuff. And to me, that's actually my favorite part of the game, is seeing that little bit of history. And then also when you do a table walkthrough, when you finally get to see just how intricate these games are. As a kid, you play the game and you're mashing the buttons on the side and you don't really know what all is going on. You're just kind of playing through a game. But for instance, that one game that you and I like, Bride of Pinbot, I think it is.
Mm-hmm.
In that game, you're constructing, you know, Bride of Pinbot. And so, you know, a ball gets locked in her mouth and that allows her to speak. And then the head flips over and then you're creating the two eyeballs. So your balls have to go in her eyes. The balls have to get to her eyes. And then that locks the two in. And then you have to, like, charge up her heart. There's a whole process, and the game will actually walk you through the sequence. And fuck me if these guys aren't geniuses, the men who put these together.
I know, they're feats of engineering.
I can't believe, there's something to be said about, especially when you look at some of the older games, which, to me, I should give a shout out to those old 1960s, 70s pinball games where there's not much sound except for the sound of, you know, the clink, 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 and the flippers and stuff. I actually find those the most relaxing to play. I don't know if you go back to any of those old school games.
Yeah, but I love them. I've been really enjoying Black Hole, which is, that one is, it's fucking nuts.
Mm-hmm.
I can't even, it's hard to describe. It has another pinball surface underneath the main one that is supposed to be like reversed gravity. And it does it by having, I can't even describe, it's crazy. Basically, it reverses gravity on another lower level,
mm-hmm.
and you play two pinball surfaces.
Yeah.
It's nuts.
Well, and then there's like the haunted house game, which is three levels. And the idea behind it is there's the cellar, the main floor, and the upstairs or something like that. And each one has, and that's a real game in real life. I mean, this isn't just some guy creating this fantastical digital game to play. They have mimicked, they made an exact replica of these in game. So I would encourage everybody. The price sounds steep. It goes for $29.99 for.
But you can buy single tables for like a couple bucks, I think.
I think it's like some of the tables go as high as $5 a piece. So if you're really selective and you only want three tables, you know, $15, that's kind of a steal if you know you're going to play those. But for $30, you get 10 tables. There are some tables where the mechanics are almost as bad as they would be in real life. So I don't play them, which is an interesting thing. It's almost as if they ported in the shitty mechanics into the game.
Yeah, I felt that way with Funhouse.
Yeah, so I encourage people to play those. So as far as games I played this week, I didn't play much of anything that is shitty. I did purchase some shitty games that I'm excited about. I purchased a combo pack of The Seventh Guest and The 11th Hour. Seventh Guest is from 93. It's an interactive movie puzzle adventure game. And then its sequel, The 11th Hour, which came out in 95. Again, they're movie puzzles, so you have live action actors playing these roles as you're doing stuff. I'm so excited to fire that game up.
Yeah, those are classics. I think I might have even played Seventh Guest.
Yeah, and a lot of people probably did, and they don't even remember that they played it. So
yeah,
it's I'm excited for that. And then the other game I'm excited about is Lucius, which looks like the dumbest fucking game I've seen all year. It's basically The Omen, but you get to play Damien, is how I understand it. So like you get to set people on fire, and you're playing a child, and you're doing evil things, and it just looks so fucking dumb. So look for those games. You know, I might do an extended play of Lucius. I'm not sure. And I'll probably stream myself playing Seventh Guest and 11th Hour. I think those are worth people just seeing that being interacted with live.
Yeah, so we also released the Crystal's Ponytail stuff on YouTube. So check that out. /SuperDumbGames.
It's a huge fanfare, I might add.
Of a long dead nation state. We fell absorbed into the enclave when we walked away. She went to sleep next to a boy. She scaled the walls, she learned to skate. She chiseled patterns in the concrete. She brought shielding down, pulled my hand, broke my skin, slowed my pulse. Ignore the sound, the fire alarms.
What's dropping November 15th, 2013. This is only out on Windows. Publisher unknown because it wasn't on Steam and I was not about to Google it. Emergency 2014. Okay. If you have the mind of a 5-year-old and want to play Fireman, this is the game for you. You have command of paramedics, fire brigades, police, and disaster relief. Send your teams out on tense, real-time missions to deal with disasters in Europe's major centers. In the series' most absorbing game yet, you will extinguish major fires, track down buried victims, maybe even girls in wells, and save whole cities. This is my favorite part of this sentence. With their populations and landmarks. Let me read that again. You'll save whole cities with their populations and landmarks.
What a weird sentence.
I know. I read this last night. I'm still trying to parse it out. I think they're trying to say you'll save the people within cities and the landmarks within those cities.
Oh, see, I was thinking that they were trying to say, by the way, these cities happen to have landmarks as a bonus so that it makes the series look like it's legitimate instead of just, you know, driving around.
But populations? What does that mean? Like, what are we supposed to recognize, like, an American versus a Brit? So they also say this fire whoever wrote this. Develop your own strategy, and this is its own paragraph. Develop your own strategy and remain in control of the situation at all times on sandbox maps.
We need to start our own consulting business and fix this shit. We could make a mint fixing these PR write-ups.
This one is truly horrible. Next paragraph. There are four new single-player missions where meteor strikes threaten the population.
Why do...
That's a paragraph. Okay. So I guess the big thing here is they now have a meteor strike that is set in 1890. Some asteroid named Caligula comes, you know, on a farm and you, like, deal with it what? Using historical horse-drawn pumper fire trucks.
I'm trying to figure this out in my brain, just how... I can't imagine being excited for that. Nope, it's not for me. Have you looked at the names of the first games for the, in the Emergency series?
Aren't they? I thought they were just Emergency and then the years.
Well, in North America, I think that might be how they were released. But get ready for this. First game, Emergency, Fighters for Life. Emergency 2, The Ultimate Fight for Life. Emergency 3, colon, Mission, colon, Life.
Two colons?
Yes. Mission, Life. Emergency 4, Global Fighters for Life. Emergency 2012.
They're using, this is like the Taco Bell of video game titles. They're using the same three words.
Get ready. They switch it up in 2012. Emergency 2012, The Quest for Peace.
Isn't that a Superman movie?
Yes, it is. It is. And then there's 2013, 2014, and then all of a sudden just Emergency 5. I
don't know. And they just gave up.
Yeah. Oh, shit.
I love the tagline for this game, too. Protect! Rescue! Salvage! Be where you are needed most!
Like, one word, bullet points, by the way, be where you need most.
Alright, so that's, I mean, listen... PlayStation 4 came out. Some games came out. Who cares? Emergency 24 or 20, was it 2013?
We're on 14.
2014. We're a year ahead already. Next up, Top Sizzlers. This might be the biggest story of the year. Sure, like I said, PlayStation 4 came out. New console generation, first in like 8 or 9 years. Whatever. More importantly, Nintendo... This is reported on, by the way, by GoNintendo.com. Great job, GoNintendo. Nintendo headline, and written by Raw Meat Cowboy. <What the fuck? laughs> Headline, Nintendo sending GameStop employees cat ears to promote Super Mario 3D World. Whoa! Huge news, GoNintendo. The story, Rami Cowboy took a screenshot of a tweet.
Oh my God.
By Rin the Yordle that has a picture of the cat ears on a GameStop desk. And Rin the Yordle writes, "Oh my God, Nintendo sent us cat ears?"
Like, wait, there's two ways to take that. Is it like, "Oh my God, this is so fucking dumb. I can't believe I work at a place where I now have to wear these." Or was that person actually excited?
It's hard to tell.
Oh, please don't be excited.
But this was reported on by GoNintendo.com. So serious news coming out of GoNintendo by world-class journalist Raw Meat Cowboy.
Oh, God.
Next up, this, I think, might be my favorite story of the first 10 episodes of Super Dumb Games. And this story comes from the NeoGAF forums, which, if you don't know, is one of the most popular gaming forums where shit just pops off there. And they actually break a lot of legit game news on these forums. And they also, like astronauts, boldly go where others will not go. And they have done so with this post. Basically, there's this sex game in Japan called Custom Made 3D. Basically, what you do is you create maids and then you have sex with them. It's Japan, people. What is particularly spectacular is NeoGAF user Wubby has been, like John Glenn or Buzz Aldrin, used Custom Made 3D with the Oculus Rift.
I saw the video of this. It was so weird. And a guy was testing it, like, in front of people at a convention, it looked like.
Yes. So let me try to, and this will be linked in the show notes. You have to see the visuals. So this guy got the game, and the game comes with a peripheral. The peripheral is shaped like a dick. That, and to the best of my ability, what you do is you put this peripheral on your dick. Like a fleshlight, but it's powered and hooked up to the game. So you put the fucking Oculus Rift VR goggles on your fucking fat, lonely face. You slide this, what looks like a pepper mill, onto your dick. And it comes with, this is my favorite part of it, it comes with 5 plastic shims. So if you're into carpentry, you know, shims are those things you, like, shove into gaps to, like, close gaps.
Sure, yeah.
So for you skinny-dicked motherfuckers out there, you've got 5 shims.
Oh, my God.
The future is a bunch of fat, basement-dwelling, disgusting men looking like Daft Punk with a fleshlight on.
As their, you know, their significant other or friend walks in on them shimming their dick into a Wiimote.
But it's going to be so normalized. Like, hey, what do you want for dinner, honey? Just get mac and cheese tonight. Man.
This would be the worst situation for a disaster to strike. You're like, I live in Earthquake Central, and I think about all the time shit I'm doing, and like an earthquake hits, and I've got to, I either die or I've got to like run out of the house or something. Like, if you've got this on your dick and you've got an Oculus Rift on your head, and you like you run out onto the street half naked. With that thing dangling between your legs. And you can't see shit because you've got fucking a blindfold on, basically, like a goddamn horse.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, I'm going to die.
Anyway, you got to check out the post. Unfortunately, the video the guy made has since been taken down. Oh. And he's being very coy. He does admit, you know, he says he's doing this for science. He tested it out and played it. And he actually gives it a pretty good review.
Compared to other pussy, it's all right.
But you got to see the visuals and try to piece it together. He doesn't actually, there's no pornographic stuff on the actual post. But he says that, you know, it moves with the game, I guess. Like, it's got motion tracking. Mm-hmm. And of course, it's in 3D because it's VR. And then there's like a G button that you press.
Oh, God.
That's like a finishing move.
Are there combos in this game?
And he also describes how like there's vent holes around the device, and it's incredible. It's absolutely incredible.
You can't top that story.
I know. Next up, so Edge Magazine, one of the biggest gaming magazines in the world, especially in the UK, recently released, in celebration of their 20th anniversary, the top 20 games as voted on by Edge readers of the last 20 years. Chris, what do you think on your personal list of the top 20 games of the last 20 years? What would be on your list? And let's see if it matches up with Edge's readers.
All right, well, I have to go with games that were prolific to me.
Yeah, we'll see if you match up at all with the mainstream.
Okay, so obviously, I'm going to say number one on my list, but not necessarily number one game that I played, because you and I were talking yesterday about creating our list of what games are our favorites. But this game makes my list just because of how it's prolific within culture, but it's also a game that I sunk a lot of my time in, and that's World of Warcraft.
World of Warcraft is number 20
on
this list.
Wow, it's not higher.
No, it's kind of surprising. I mean, I believe this list is ranked. So yeah, the World of Warcraft came in at number 20.
All right. I'm also going to say, again, I'm going by games, you know, honestly, and this, okay, so this also spans, this is PC and it's all systems, right?
Yep.
Okay. Put a lot of time in Portal.
Yes, Portal's number 16.
Okay, we also talked yesterday, or no, actually, I was talking with another friend of ours, and actually, I'd like your opinion on this now that I'm thinking of it, because I was thinking of game releases that were, like, big time in my life. And Vice City, of all the Grand Theft Auto games, that was the one I think that I had the most enthusiasm for over San Andreas. I think I recognize San Andreas as a better game, technically, but I love Vice City. I'm going to say Vice City's on this list, but that's because I love the game so much. And I'd also like to hear your opinion on which game you prefer.
Yes, and this is surprising. Vice City comes in at number 18, and there are no other Grand Theft Autos on this list, which to me was shocking.
It is shocking.
Because Vice City is also my favorite, but I feel like most people are San Andreas people.
Yeah, like, with San Andreas, I feel like it's a better game mechanically or something, but there's something about Vice City, and maybe it's just the atmosphere of the game that did it more for me. All right, I'll move on. Here's a game I've been wanting to play again for a while. I just don't want to rebuy it. My brother actually sold it off and didn't tell me after I lent it to him. And this goes along with Vice City, and it goes along with the whole open world theme as well. Because I think Rockstar made this game, but maybe I'm wrong. But I really loved Red Dead Redemption.
Number 15. So far, every single game you've listed has been on this list.
Wow. And did you love Red Dead Redemption as much as I did? Because it was fucking brilliant.
I did really like it, but if I was to make my top 20 games, I just don't know that it would. There was something that didn't wholly click for me, and I think a lot of people have the similar criticism where it felt a little inconsistent and maybe a bit too long. Mm-hmm. But it has some of that moment when you cross over into Mexico, and in my view, is one of the great moments of this entire generation of games.
Absolutely. Thinking of other open world games, I would also guess Skyrim.
Skyrim, not on the list, and I don't even think any Bethesda games are on this list, which is another, this might be kind of unique to the UK in a way. I don't know if those games that don't have a lot of interest from the UK. I think those might be really big in the American market. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
All right, so I'm going to just give one more guess because there's no way I'm going to get all these. And the last one is the one that I declared to you what I believe to be my favorite game of the last 10 years at least, which is Half-Life 2. That's my final guess, and you can read the rest.
Half-Life 2 comes in at number 3.
Holy shit, all right. All right.
So the rest of the list, number 19, this one's curious, Majora's Mask, Zelda, I don't know. 18, Vice City. 17, I think this might be the oldest game on the list, Chrono Trigger.
Oh, brilliant game. I didn't even think, though, that far back.
Yeah, it was released in 95, so we haven't... You can go as far back as 93 on this list.
Yeah.
16, Portal. 15, Red Dead. 14, Bioshock, which would certainly be on my list. 13, Ico. On my list of shame, something I haven't played. 12, Last of Us, which I'm hopefully playing later over Christmas break. 11, Dark Souls.
I played that game. I know people like to sink a lot of time into it. Just wasn't for me.
Yeah, Dark Souls wasn't for me, but I totally get it.
Yeah, exactly. That's how I feel.
And we have a friend, Byron, who I believe I referenced during my EverQuest Close Quarters. And like I said, Byron is a person who likes to master games. Byron 100% at Dark Souls.
No way.
Just like,
holy shit.
He should get a fucking medal for that. 10, Super Mario Galaxy, wonderful game. 9, Metal Gear Solid, one of my favorite games of all time. 8, Shadow of the Colossus.
Oh, shit!
Brilliant.
That's one of my... I forgot about that. That's a PS2 game. I loved Shadow of the Colossus. One of the best designed RPGs I've ever played.
7, GoldenEye. 6, the original Halo.
Nah, I don't like Halo.
5, Resident Evil 4.
Nah.
4, Final Fantasy 7.
I played it.
And the farther we get into this list, you're like, eh.
Yeah, I like the upper part better, I think.
3, Half-Life 2.
Yeah.
2, Super Mario 64. That was
a great game.
Probably my top 10.
Yeah.
1, Zelda Ocarina of Time. Fucking wonderful.
Oh, yeah, okay.
So, 1 and 2, Nintendo games.
They're dominating, because last week wasn't it Nintendo top seller in Japan, right? Like, for...
Yeah.
Almost... Yeah, look at them.
Shit, we are over time again. Hot off the wire. Is not getting its proper due.
Which group is being cut out right now? Who do we have to worry about? The
Machete Experience. They're really into Hot Off the Wire.
Sorry, Machete Experience. Please don't hold this against us. You'll get your time.
Super dumb Hot Off the Wire story here. 1/3 of gamers would go carless for 6 months to be first to get newest game consoles. A new survey finds. This is new! news. I don't care.
I don't either.
So it's really fascinating to me. Some stupid ass company did this stupid ass survey just to get a press release. And the survey is the most bizarre shit I've ever seen. For instance, one of the questions is, what's more painful than buffering during streaming video? A root canal, migraine, sprained ankle, or flu?
Not, they're all more painful.
I know!
All of those choices, I would rather have a buffer than have any of those things happen to me.
So,
why couldn't they even make it tech related? Like, what's worse than a buffer? Like dial up modem or, you know, I don't know, something that it's none of those even correlate.
Could you imagine someone calling you up and asking you this on the fucking
phone? No, I'd hang up.
The results of this, by the way. So people were asked, is a root canal more painful than buffering? Is a migraine more painful than buffering? The general population for all of those options said that buffering was more painful.
Oh my God. What's the sample size of this survey?
900 people.
That's a decent sample size. What the fuck?
So 60 or 59% of people said that buffering was more painful than both a root canal and a migraine.
If faced with those actual options, like literally in some sort of experience where they've got a, you know, they got a dentist, they've got a way to induce a migraine, you know, all these other things. I don't think a single one of them would go, put me in the chair, give me the root canal. I don't want to ever have to buffer again. I would say buffer me the rest of my life. I don't want that fucking root canal.
I have to believe that people were confused or something.
Or they're calling like senior centers who don't know what any of this is. Is that the cue to heaven? You know, buffering?
Think about your everyday man or woman with an Oculus Rift on their head and a device on their penis constructing their perfect maid. They get a phone call, you know, they remove the Oculus from their head and it makes a sound as it comes off.
They do not remove the device from their penis. Of course.
They're probably confused. Let me see, are there any other highlights here? One interesting thing is they kind of gauged where people's interest levels were in the next gen of video games.
Mm-hmm.
So they asked, were you interested in Oculus Rift? Were you interested in Xbox One? Were you interested in PlayStation 4? The general population, the number one thing they're most interested in is the Oculus Rift.
Of all of those, that's the one I'm most interested in, especially after the breaking news about having being able to put a device on my penis.
Yeah, if they had known about that news, this would have been totally
scared. Yeah, it would have. But seriously, I'm more excited about those than any of these next gen consoles.
Would you use that sex powered Oculus Rift thing? Would you do that? You don't have to buy it. It just comes in the mail from one of a super dumb game super fan.
Look, I'm thinking back to, like, for instance, remember when Howard got the real doll and they just had to do it? There was no, for those who don't get the reference, I'm talking about the Howard Stern show. They were sent a real doll. I mean, if you don't know what that is, you can look that up yourself.
It's like an ultimate sex doll.
Yeah, and the staff had their, four of the guys on staff had their way with it. I think that the curiosity is too much. I think I would do it.
Yeah, like the NeoGAF guy said, it's for science.
I hate to say this, but I think that in a way it is kind of like it's the future of masturbation. I think in the future we're going to have robots masturbating us is all
I mean,
saying.
If you go to the zoo, most animals at the zoo are just looking for stuff to either put their dicks in or rub their vagines against.
That's all most men outside of the zoo are doing, too.
I mean, it's just what, like a snow cone falls into a chimp pen and dicks are being plunged into that snow cone. Like, before it even hits the ground, a dick has penetrated.
I've heard of guys who just turned the just the right way on a couch cushion, and next thing you know, they're going to town.
That was always kind of, when you get to a certain age and suddenly it's no longer shameful to talk about masturbation, and people would reveal the different ways they would.
Yeah.
And some people, I can't remember who was telling me, but some people would, like, use couch cushions.
I don't understand it. I don't understand the cleanup. I don't know what you're doing.
It seems ill-advised.
Yeah. There are better ways to do it. I don't get it. The level of intelligence that has been spent on figuring out different ways to masturbate is like, it's all of that combined could have had us exploring the galaxies.
Anyway, folks, that is your news. Welcome to the wild card segment. I think episode one was the only episode where we did fan fiction.
Yeah, it could be. I don't remember. Yeah, it was.
We are bringing it back. So in episode one, we did Dark Forces. Mm-hmm. In this episode 10, I've dug up for you.
Oh boy.
Some Gex.
No.
Fan fiction.
No way. No way.
So I scoured the internet.
Oh my god.
I found two Gex stories. This is one of them. This was published on fanfiction.net by Tito Mosquito on New Year's Eve 2008.
Oh man.
Tito Mosquito on New Year's Eve was writing Gex fanfiction. God bless you, Tito. So if you remember, and who doesn't, from our Gex Extreme and our Gex discussion in episode one or two or whatever, Gex has this sophisticated backstory where his dad was a fucking nuclear scientist or something and died right. In a rocket explosion. So Tito begins the story explaining all that backstory and whatever. But this is after that fucking hugely traumatic event happens, and the Gex family leaves Hawaii and moves to California after the dad is fucking dead. So we begin. 1 week later, a moving band pulled up in front of a ranch-style house in Encino, California, surrounded by white picket fences. The neighborhood was inhabited by white supremacists.
What the fuck is going on?
Mrs. Gecko and her three youngest children got out of the car to admire their new home. As the moving men uploaded a crate containing Gex and his beloved TV, his mother explained she was excited about the family's new beginning. Note, there's white supremacists here. That doesn't get addressed. Why Gex is in a fucking crate?
Compared to the rest of his family. Like, the rest of his family gets out of the car. Wow, look at what's going on. And then Gex gets hoisted out in a fucking moving crate.
Like Hannibal Lecter.
Yeah.
That's exactly what Maud said to her husband after she went through menopause. Gex laughed.
Wait, so Maud is... Her name is Maud Gex? Or Maud Gecko?
I don't know. I'm confused already. Oh, wait. Oh, so his mother exclaimed that she was excited about the family's new beginning. Then Gex says, that's exactly what Maud said to her husband after she went through menopause.
Gex says that to his mom. So we...
Yeah.
So we have not been clued in as to who Maud is and why Gex is allowed to talk about menopause with his mother.
Well, what you should know is that Gex is always making punchy jokes about pop culture. So there was a television show called Maud, right?
Sure.
So I think he's referencing that, saying, and the joke here is that menopause is not really a new beginning, but it is in a way, and it's fun. Yeah, okay, what? So get ready.
I'd like to think a Maud. I'm just saying, Maud isn't necessarily the TV series of choice when I think of B. Arthur, you know, playing in a show. You know, maybe a Golden Girls reference, but Maud isn't my go-to place when I think of a pop culture reference. But go ahead.
For Tito, on December 31st, 2008, it was. So Gex is obviously still having trouble dealing with his dad's death. You think, Tito? But Mrs. Gecko thought she knew just what to do. That night, the doorbell rang, and a burly older lizard came in carrying a basket of treats. "Good evening, everyone," he said. "My name is Harv. Welcome to our neighborhood." He shook hands with Mrs. Gecko and the kids, sans Gex. He passed out various chocolate-covered bugs to Gex's siblings. "Oh, boy!" one of the young geckos exclaimed. "Yummy! Chocolate!" Harv grabbed a seat on the table to talk to Mrs. Gecko. "I've got one spot left on my Saturday all-pro girl-watching team."
Oh my god.
"I was wondering if anyone would want to fill in," he asked in a slightly louder tone. Now, sidebar here. I'm still, in the back of my mind, what's with the white supremacist shit?
I don't know. Right? I'm wondering, I was thinking maybe this guy is coming as a representative of some white supremacist, but he's also a gecko, so that doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, but anyway, listeners, I'm curious about it. You're curious about it. I don't know. Is this guy a white supremacist? I don't know.
Is Encino known for its like white? I thought that would be like Bakersfield would be like that's where white supremacists are at. Maybe there's some kind of cultural thing we should know about Encino.
I don't think so. I mean, I used to live near there. I don't. The only thing you should know about Encino is that the Wild Stallions are there. Oh wait, no, that's San Dimas. San Dimas, Encino man.
That's right.
Yeah,
Brendan Fraser's there.
So picking up after Harv is asking about an all-pro girl watching team. I don't even know who's speaking here. Jack Tripper is available, but only if he could get out of the two dates he made for the same night.
No, Three's Company reference. Oh man.
Oh, that was Gex.
Oh, hey.
From the front from out in front of the TV, Gex made that little quip. Harv seemed a little confused. He whispered something to Mrs. Gecko and then took a seat next to the tuned out gecko.
Which
is Gex. God, this is written terribly.
Okay.
"Would you like to take that spot on the team?" Harv asked, straight out.
Straight out?
"I love to. But I promised Bosley that I would watch the Angels for him all week," Gex replied. That Gex!
Look, can't do it. Jan Michael Vincent and I are getting ready to hop into Airwolf.
Get it? Wink, wink. Harv chuckled. "Maybe you've been spending a little too much time watching TV. You need to go outside," he suggested. The last time I gone outside, my dad blew up. So... Clearly, I haven't read this before, so when you're hearing this, I'm hearing this. So, "The last time I gone outside, my dad blew up, surrounded by galleons of burning tapioca," Gex explained, frowning without taking his eyes off the set.
Oh my god.
Then laughed at the TV.
What's on TV? I don't know. I thought the TV was off.
This is some heavy shit. So, I mean, Tito Mosquito is layering in some deep drama here. So Gex is coding deep trauma in this humor and then staring blankly at the TV screen. Completely out of ideas, Harv bid Mrs. Gecko an exasperated farewell and left. Now what was a concerned mother to do?
About what? This guy comes over with candy. He asks if somebody wants to be on his women watching team or something like that. He gets some yip-yap from a gecko who's got post-traumatic stress about his dad blowing up around a bunch of gallons of tapioca. And then he leaves bewildered and not sure what to do. With what? With you walked in this...
Harv, this was not a good idea.
But do you see what I'm saying? He walks in with one agenda, walks out having not fulfilled that agenda, but like in the interim, nothing happened that would make any sense. So he just leaves. It's like,
it's David Lynchian. In yes. A way. Like, things are just happening and there's like highs and lows. Very, I love that Harv sees a family that's a woman and three kids moving into a house, and he comes over and is like, who wants to look at some box?
Yeah. With me? The mom's going to go, I do. Yeah. Or any of the kids, for that matter, would be like, we do, mom, can we please? Oh my, is that the story?
No, there's a little bit more. And this is just part one.
Take us home.
The next morning, Gex came running downstairs, expecting to have breakfast with banana splits as usual, when he froze in his tracks. The TV was gone. This must be some kind of joke. Was it out for repairs? Did someone break in and steal it? Come on, man, this isn't funny. The room began to spin. Gex needed a TV fix. The little suction cups on his hands were beginning to twitch. What the hell is going on? Just then, his mom came into the room, crossing her arms. If you're looking for TV, I gave it away to some gypsies earlier this morning, she said.
How did the gypsies make it through a white supremacist neighborhood unscathed?
You know, gypsies always just passing through neighborhoods.
Sure.
You know, caravans. Hear the squeaking wheels wake you up in the morning. The sound of like a little squeeze box.
Yep.
Enough is enough. You need to start doing things like a normal gecko. Go catch some flies, practice walking up walls, enter a tongue-lashing contest. But for cripe's sake, stop watching TV. Gex couldn't believe this. The one thing in his life that had meaning was gone, and his mom was behind it. Gex exploded with rage. I'm never setting foot inside this TV-less house again, Gex announced and stormed at the front door. Mrs. Gecko ran after him, begging him to stay, but it was too late. His siblings cried as he walked out of the front lawn. Mrs. Gecko had done the unthinkable, and this was the result. End of part one.
Oh my god. Maybe you should save part two for next week, because this is an overload of... This is an overload, honestly. I can't...
And everyone is on the edge of their seats.
Yeah, because what's going to happen next? You know, we've got gypsies that now have his TV. Is he going after the gypsies? Does he recruit the white supremacists to his cause? Because they're going to definitely want to curb stop some gypsies, I'm sure. Does Gex become a white supremacist himself, get tattooed maybe a swastika on his tail or whatever? I mean, there's a lot of questions that still need answering. What about Harv? Maybe Harv is in on this whole thing. Maybe he saw the TV, thought it looked pretty good, and he snagged it from the mom for, like, on the cheap. I don't know.
All this and more will be revealed.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, that wraps up episode 10 of the Super Dumb Games podcast. Check out the content on YouTube for the pony episodes. I blocked out that memory of the game. Crystal's Ponytail.
SuperDumbGames.com. Yeah, go watch the Crystal's Pony stuff on YouTube. Twitter.com/SuperDumbGames. iTunes. And if you'd like, rate us, review us on iTunes. That always helps.
All right, see you.
Dumb Games.